Hi there. I'm Mark Swallow, and I'm glad you are joining me for today's God Is podcast. Let's get started learning who God is. Thank you for joining me today from wherever you are and by however you listen, as we meet together coast to coast here in the United States and all the way around the world. As part of an introduction to the lives of God and Abraham in relation to one another, before we get to the actual text of the book of Genesis, we have been talking about the Hebrew roots of being Christian. Last week we looked at this from the biblical or theological side. Today I want to speak about this from the practical side. God's word is always practical. That is, we put into action what we read. Biblically, I remind you that we met Paul, the prominent Jew and Christian apostle. He wrote of the cultivated olive tree with Abraham as its root. And he said that Gentile Christians are wild olive branches from a wild olive tree, whom God has grafted into the cultivated olive tree. That means that Abraham is our root. Those of you Gentile Christians within the sound of my voice. As Paul wrote to the Galatians in Galatians chapter 3 and verse 29, if you belong to Christ, then you are Abraham's descendants, heirs according to promise. We receive our nourishment from the root of the olive tree, and this does two things. First, it makes Abraham and God's promises to him very important to us. Second, we Gentiles must not be arrogant or boastful, prideful towards the Jews. And we read in Romans 11 of Paul correcting what has way too often been our arrogance towards our Jewish brothers and sisters. Marv Wilson writes about the history of our pride in his outstanding book, Our Father, Abraham. I am quoting him now. Paul's warning to Gentile believers about pride went unheeded. The church had become overwhelmingly Gentile, so it reasoned that there was no more need for the support of the root, Israel. What presumption! At first, the Gentiles were but a rejected wild olive branch allowed by God's mercy to be grafted into the believing family of Abraham. But in the second, third, and fourth centuries, a new spirit of arrogance and supersessionism had arisen. Paul never anticipated that things would develop this far. He insisted that God did not reject his people, for God's gifts and his call are irrevocable, Romans 11:29. Yet Gentiles claimed to have replaced Israel. As the new Israel, the Gentile church expropriated what had belonged to Israel. End quote. Dr. Wilson moves on from there to chart the ugly and shameful history of how Christians have negatively treated Jews since Paul wrote to the Romans. I encourage you to get a copy of Marvin Wilson's book, Our Father Abraham, Jewish Roots of the Christian Faith, and read all that he writes. It is very convicting, but let me lift out one more sentence of his wise words to us. What follows is very true, but you may need some time to think about this before you will agree. One may say that for a Gentile to have a right relationship to God, he must humbly accept and appreciate a Jewish book, believe in a Jewish Lord, and be grafted into a Jewish people, thereby taking on their likeness through a commonly shared stock. I will repeat that. One may say that for a Gentile to have a right relationship to God, he must humbly accept and appreciate a Jewish book, believe in a Jewish Lord, and be grafted into a Jewish people, thereby taking on their likeness through a commonly shared stock. I agree, and it has been important to me to draw this to your attention as we get going. Recognizing and valuing that we too are the spiritual descendants of Abraham, acknowledging who we come from, This must make us not indifferent to the Jews, but simpatico with them. I invite you to apply all of this to your life and to keep this close in your mind and heart as we get going into Genesis and catch up with God and with Abraham. Speaking of indifference, this weekend I was reading again about the Holocaust. Our Hebrew friends call this the Shoah, meaning catastrophe. This was the systematic, state-sponsored killing of 6 million Jewish men, women, and children, and millions of others by Nazi Germany and its collaborators during World War II. This is horrific, but we must read about it, and we must remember, and commit ourselves afresh and anew to never, ever let this happen again. As I read, I came upon Elie Wiesel, Holocaust survivor and author of one of the most succinct and profound autobiographies on his imprisonment in concentration camps, the title of which is Night. I highly recommend you and your children and grandchildren read Night. Wiesel was invited by President and Mrs. Clinton to speak at the White House on April 12th, 1999. Here is a small part of what he said about the perils of indifference. You can read his full remarks online and even watch the speech on YouTube, and I encourage you to do so. What is indifference? Etymologically, the word means no difference, a strange and unnatural state in which the lines blur between light and darkness, dusk and dawn, crime and punishment, cruelty and compassion, good and evil. Of course, indifference can be tempting, more than that, seductive. It is so much easier to look away from victims. It is so much easier to avoid such rude interruptions to our work, our dreams, and our hopes. It is, after all, awkward, troublesome to be involved in another person's pain and despair. Yet, for the person who is indifferent, his or her neighbor are of no consequence, and therefore their lives are meaningless. Their hidden or even visible anguish is of no interest. Indifference reduces the other to an abstraction. In a way, to be indifferent to that suffering is what makes the human being inhumane. Indifference, after all, is more dangerous than anger and hatred. Anger can at times be creative. One writes a great poem, a great symphony, have done something special for the sake of humanity because one is angry at the injustice that one witnesses. But indifference is never creative. Even hatred at times may elicit a response. You fight it, you denounce it, you disarm it. Indifference elicits no response. Indifference is not a response. Indifference is not a beginning, it is an end. And therefore, indifference is always the friend of the enemy, for it benefits the aggressor, never his victim, whose pain is magnified when he or she feels forgotten. The political prisoner in his cell, the hungry children, the homeless refugees. Not to respond to their plight, not to relieve their solitude by offering them a spark of hope, is to exile them from human memory. And in denying their humanity, we betray our own. Indifference, then, is not only a sin, it is a punishment. And this is one of the most important lessons of this outgoing century's wide-ranging experiments in good and evil. Those were Elie Wiesel's penetrating words on the perils of indifference. And I bring these wise words to you now because I want us to never be indifferent to our dear friends, the Hebrew people. We do not have time today for me to tell you about the shameful way in which many Christians were indifferent to the Holocaust in the very moments it was happening. Yes, there are certain righteous Gentiles, Wiesel calls them, who took action to save Jews. I think of Corrie Ten Boom, for example. But the reality is most Christians were silent and inactive. They were indifferent. We live now, not then, and there is nothing we can do to change history. That being said, we can change the present and the future. Anti-Judaism and anti-Semitism has absolutely no place in the heart, mind, words, and actions of anyone who claims to be Christian. I am hopeful that understanding our Christian roots as Hebrew will rightly motivate us to support our Jewish friends, and yes, to stand with them and defend them whenever and wherever they are under attack, in both subtle and not so subtle ways. Christians and Jews, we need each other. Are you with me on this? There are many practical things we can do to enhance friendships between Jews and Gentiles. All of our churches can get much more involved in this, and if you are interested in some ideas, write to me. I want to end today with the words of the Jews, the Apostles Paul and John. What they command should motivate all of our actions. In Ephesians 5, verses 1 and 2, Paul writes, "Therefore be imitators of God as beloved children, and walk in love, just as Christ also loved you and gave himself up for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma." Imitate God and walk in love. And in 1 John 3, verse 18, John writes, "Little children, let's not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and truth." Mindful of our Hebrew roots, let's love our Jewish friends with our deeds. Join us tomorrow for God Is. Thank you for listening to this God Is podcast. Drop me an email and tell me what you think. mark@godisministry.org. That's mark@godisministry.org. Please do share this with others, and be sure and join me for the next one.